Back again.
Hey.
Here we are.
Here we are.
Hey guys, everyone, welcome back to another episode of In Phase, the Cycle Syncing Podcast. I'm Robin.
And I'm Lauren. And this is In Phase, a podcast, a space, and a community of women who are passionate about embracing all the aspects of their cycles, their bodies, and their lives.
Pew, pew, pew. Okay, so how have you been since we last talked?
Oh man, it really depends on the hour.
Okay.
It's kind of how I keep saying it.
Okay.
I'm like, there are some moments that feel amazing, some moments that feel like exhausting.
Just a reminder for those who are not caught up or maybe haven't listened to previous episodes, Lauren is fresh off the baby train, meaning she just gave birth how many weeks ago?
Yeah, 11 weeks ago. So it'll be 3 months officially tomorrow, which is pretty nuts.
Wow.
Pretty nuts. And first one. So this is like a whole new journey, to say the least.
So we had an entire episode just about different phases of our lives that both of us are going through right now or have gone through since we, one, kicked off this podcast, two, it just recently. That's it, just one and two. And Lauren's was that she's in this new phase of motherhood. Mine was that I'm in a new phase of being engaged, which is far less exciting. But I did get a puppy this week, which I feel like puts me out like a little bit farther out in the new phase.
I was going to say, situation. I think you've also entered a phase of motherhood.
Yes.
To be honest.
But I also, I do hate it, and I want to be so cognizant of, I would never compare having a dog to having a child, like a real child. And like, I don't know, because I've had dogs before and you love your dogs so deeply. It is unbelievable. Like, they are the most loved member of any and every family, in my opinion, or at least my experience. But my partner's out of town this weekend, and I would never be like, I'm a single mom this weekend to any real single mom, you know?
No,
like wildly offensive.
It's so funny though, because like, I also have a dog who has been my kid for sure.
Yes.
Like,
Shout out Hank.
I refer to him as my son. I'm obsessed with him. And he's also like high maintenance. Like, I think, you know, like, he needs a pill twice a day.
So last time we were recording, we were alerted that Lauren had to leave abruptly because Hank's medication alarm went off.
Yep.
And that I had much respect for, to be honest.
Yeah. So it's like twice a day. It's like at 6:30 a.m. and 6:30 p.m. he needs a pill.
He's got it.
So like, my whole life revolves around this dog. And I've always said Hank is my son.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as I came home with my daughter, he instantly became my dog.
Really?
Like this. Like, all of a sudden I was like, sit, roll over. All of a sudden I was giving him dog treats. I've like only ever given him parts of my meals. And I'm like, now you have the sweet potato disc from Trader Joe's.
Really?
Instantly he became my dog.
Oh my God.
It was so weird.
Do you think he can tell a difference?
I think yes. Unfortunately, yes.
Okay. Oh, like, is he sad?
I don't think he's sad.
Like Lady and the Tramp, you remember when they bring home the baby?
I think he can tell there's
he's gonna run away with a street dog lady.
Oh my gosh. It's really depressing because I can tell he's just like needier.
Oh.
Like at night he'll like lick our legs more because he wants more attention. And then whenever someone comes over to see the baby, Hank like sits on their lap instantly. Like, it's so, he's like Velcro dog. And he usually is to all of our guests, but it's like more extreme now that there's a new baby.
How is he with her?
He's just kind of like curious.
Okay, so he's not like very, like, you know, you'll see those what word am I looking for? Like collections on TikTok or something where it's like, check out a million of these dogs, like bonding with these babies right away. It's like puppies crawling into like bassinets and licking them and protecting them. I'm like, oh my God, I need a baby and a dog after seeing these.
Yeah, no, he's, at first he would just kind of like sniff her.
Okay.
And then just like walk away. Like, just sort of like trying to figure out what her vibe is.
Yes. We're all trying to figure out what her vibe
is. Exactly. I was like, us too, bro.
Yeah.
Recently he started licking her feet and like licking her head, which is really cute.
Oh, that's so cute.
And then last week I caught her like petting him.
Shut up.
Like trying to like figure out like what the texture of his fur, like it's, she's been like very curious recently too. So I feel like their little bond is starting to form. But Gabe and I keep saying, we're like, as soon as she starts eating solid food, they're going to become best friends.
Yes.
Because Hank is like the most food motivated creature.
And she'll be throwing
Cheerios,
you know,
along the floor. It's going to be like a whole thing. But it's been fun.
Were you ever worried? I know he's the least aggressive dog ever, but of like him biting her in any way?
I was. He's never bitten, but I was worried that like it could spark something. Just
totally.
The jealousy. I think because he is like, he's a ham. He loves being the center of attention.
And what kind of dog is he again?
He's a Boston with a little bit of bulldog in
him. So. Yeah, which like are not like, I mean, that's like very much so like, don't bully my breed. You know, it's like, it's more pit bull, but like, it's not like a dog that has like zero track record of not biting.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. And what's funny is that, like, years ago, my neighbors downstairs, their dog had puppies, And she asked us to puppy sit for a few hours. So we brought up these six puppies into my apartment. They were so
cute.
Were
you friends?
Yeah. We were friends.
Oh,
yeah.
My. I'm like, that is, as someone who just got one puppy, that is the biggest ask ever. I'm nervous. We're having someone come stay here in a month.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we've got to get her in check before then. I cannot ask anyone else to do this.
No, it's a big ask.
Yeah.
I think she like, her like she had to like pick up her son. It was like something super last minute. Okay. She needed the help. We were buddies. And they were all like the cutest puppies. So for us, it was like, I was like, oh my gosh, of course.
Yeah, I get to like sit in a pile of puppies.
I was like, what a dream. So I brought all these puppies upstairs and I had Hank. And I had never seen this version of Hank where all of a sudden he was like, there are things that are cuter than me in this apartment.
Did he lose his shit?
Lost his shit. Like he grabbed like the loudest toys he could find. He was like running around the apartment, like squeaking these loud toys.
Is Hank a Leo?
What is he? April 26th?
No,
no, he's a Taurus.
Yeah, Taurus. Well, okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Taurus, just like my daughter.
Oh my God.
Just crazy. And then the worst part that I'll never forget is he then started like sticking his nose under the puppies and tried to like flip them like little pancakes. And I was like, you're a monster. Like my sweet boy like became a monster for like 2 hours.
Do you think
he was
doing it to fuck with them?
I think I've never seen him like do anything like that, but I truly think like there was something like stealing attention from him and he had to like take some sort of action.
You know, again, who amongst us?
Right.
Like, hasn't been there.
And he was younger then, but that's what I was worried about. So I was like, this baby is going to have so much more attention
than
this.
Yeah, this baby is that pile of puppies.
Right, like will he flip her like a pancake?
Yeah, so far, so good.
So far, no flipping.
Okay.
No flapjacks in the house.
A win for Hank and a win for you.
Yeah, truly.
So Lauren, what we talked about on one of the previous episodes was, could be last week's, could be one before, depending on when we decided to roll these out. So I couldn't tell you right now. but in talking about these new phases of life, we touched on this idea of what Lauren was going through right now, not necessarily just like the act of giving birth. And when we get together, we'll yap for like 2 hours, and there were 2 hours that had gone by. And all of a sudden we were like, wait, I want to know. We were starting to dive into postpartum. Mm-hmm. And in terms of this being a podcast, a space for women to talk about different phases of, yes, their cycles, but also their lives, I think the idea of moving into a phase that is not talked about as much as it should be for women should be something that we cover on this podcast, especially if one of the hosts is going through it right now.
Yeah.
So today we wanted to talk about postpartum. Mm-hmm. We want to talk about Lauren's experience. We want to talk about my fear of that experience and how that relates to my want or not want for having children myself. And we also want to talk about just generally how this is approached in America, in society, and in culture, and what we can do to be better for women as partners, as friends, as community, as just fellow women as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think you hit the nail on the head. It's like, I feel like it's not a thing we talk about a lot. And I feel like more recently, the discussion has become more popular.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been talking a lot more as a society about postpartum depression.
Yep.
Which I think is great for us to have the conversation. That made me actually so scared because I only knew postpartum as depression.
Really?
Yeah, just because I feel like the sort of change in conversation, I think, then also sort of ingrained this like extreme fear in me personally about experiencing that after giving birth. And so I do think like the more we can talk about all the different phases of postpartum, all the different ways that people are feeling, I think it helps just create a more dynamic picture of what the phase actually is versus it feeling so singular.
Because what is the definition of postpartum? It is the phase that you are in. It's post-birth, right? Wait, let's look it up.
Yeah. I think it's just technically being, after you've given birth.
Define post.
Yeah, it's the official definition.
Partum. Postpartum refers to the period after childbirth, specifically the time during which a woman's body recovers from pregnancy and delivery.
Like for instance, I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about how the term postpartum is now interchangeable with postpartum depression.
Yes.
Right?
It is. I have postpartum.
Right.
It's like, no. You are postpartum. You have postpartum depression.
Right.
It says also, to elaborate on a little bit more, the time after giving birth, a complex phase of physical healing, emotional adjustment, and identity shift for mothers.
Yeah.
Say, how long technically is postpartum?
Yeah, that's a question. Is it like the rest of your life?
Right? I mean, like you're always going to be postpartum now.
And people talk about like
Post giving birth. And it's the fourth trimester, right?
Meaning like the first 3 months postpartum. But I don't know if what so we count.
It says up to 12 months or more. Mm. Acute postpartum is 24 hours after giving birth. Early postpartum is 0 to 6 weeks. Late postpartum is 6 weeks to 6 months. And extended postpartum is up to 12 months or more.
Is there, okay, while we're consulting the mm-hmm. experts on online, is yes. there a correlation with specifically breastfeeding? No, because not everyone breastfeeds. But I was just thinking about like the hormones that your body is going through upon also producing milk.
Well, there's a correlation from what I've looked up before and done a little bit of research on and talked with friends about. There's a correlation between both better mental health with breastfeeding because of the oxytocin that is released. So people mm-hmm. oftentimes like, you should breastfeed. It's going to bond with your baby. You're going to release more happy hormones, et cetera. Oxytocin makes us happy. Happy people just don't go kill their husbands. They
right.
just don't.
Right.
So... But there's also a correlation with breastfeeding with larger mental health struggles.
Yeah.
If the baby's having trouble latching, if you as a mother are sleep deprived. So you have to weigh how it's going for you as the individual, because right. it could technically be really great for you or really bad for you mental health wise.
Totally. Totally.
Which, you know, all things in life.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's funny because it's like when people ask me like how I'm doing.
Yeah.
For me, it's like the hardest part is the breastfeeding.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Why?
Breastfeeding and pumping. To be honest, I'm lucky in that like she latches pretty easily.
Okay.
That was like such a gift. But
wait,
this...
pause. Sorry. I don't mean to interrupt to reference Lena Dunham, but did you ever watch Girls?
Okay. I watched the first season and a half.
Damn.
And I know it's really controversial.
You didn't?
I didn't finish.
From the first season and a half? Okay. It is, my opinion, one of the best shows ever.
And I know this is like, I know. I don't even know if I should say this out loud.
Okay, go ahead.
Because here's the thing. No, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
In that, like, the writing's unbelievable. The secondary characters in that show are unbelievable. Lena Dunham's character, to me, is so unlikable.
Correct.
That I literally, I can't get past the second season. And I've tried, Robin, I think 6-7 times.
Seriously?
Yes. Because, again, the second, it's unbelievable, but she's so unlikable to me.
She's the worst. Hannah is the worst.
So it's like, I feel like in season two is when it becomes so focused on her even more.
I think season two is when she's with Adam, or is that when she breaks up with Adam for the Black Republican, who is Donald Glover?
Yes.
Did you get to that part?
Yes.
Where they had the breakup episode?
I don't remember the breakup episode, but I know.
Oh my God, you should go back and watch it. Okay. When I'm sad, I turn on the Girls episode with Donald Glover, where he is, for those of you who don't know, that's Childish Gambino, and he's an incredible actor as well. Also, The Smiths on Amazon, amazing.
Yeah, no, he's also, like, I think the most talented person
I'm obsessed with him.
He's unbelievable.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
I mean, protect Donald Glover at all costs.
Also, like, the last movie that he produced and starred in, he aligned it with the release of his last album.
Smart.
Just fucking brilliant.
He's an entertainer.
Oh, God.
You know?
I know. Oh.
But in that episode, Donald Glover, who is Black, plays a Republican living in Brooklyn who Hannah dates. And that is like the entire storyline. The fact that she's dating a Republican, Elijah obviously is not down with it. And the breakup all comes down to, go watch it. But it circles around race and him being a Republican in the most cringy, but also like hilarious way that only Hannah Horvath and Lena Dunham could accomplish. So I encourage everyone to go watch it. But not to jump on your latching story, the last episode of Girls ever in the season is called Latch, or in the series. And Hannah has a baby, and she moves to like upstate New York to become a professor, and she like lives in this house. And the entire episode is about getting this baby to latch. The very last episode, like Marnie is there trying to help with the baby, obviously making all about her. Her mom comes out to try to help, and it truly is. It's called Latch, and it's the last episode of the season. So anytime someone's talking about latching and breastfeeding, I'm like, what about Girls though?
Okay.
As someone who hasn't had a baby and doesn't have anything to give to the conversation, like, I totally get it. I did see the Girls episode. I get that it's really, really hard.
That's amazing. I should try to go back.
Oh, I hope you do.
Let's try to go back. I know it's like, it's controversial. That's funny though. Not funny. It's interesting that there's a whole episode about it, because that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that
it makes sense that Lena Dunham would write that too.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. Well, it's funny because it's like so when I gave birth, I didn't know this, but they start breastfeeding. They want you to start breastfeeding like right away. And she latched really easily.
Queen.
Which is great. And so it was kind of this interesting thing where like, I felt like I was amazing at breastfeeding right away.
Yes, because I'm sure you were. Well, you're the best at it. Lauren's the best breastfeeder.
I wasn't. I just got lucky because she was good at latching. And then by the time, as like you evolve, your milk, like my milk supply was changing.
Okay.
As she's getting bigger, I'm learning how to hold her differently. Breastfeeding became really hard. And it's funny. I was talking about this with a friend the other day. I think part of the reason why it felt so sort of like defeating was because I thought I was really good at it. And then I got bad at it. You know what I mean?
It's like a sport.
Yes.
That's like me with golf. Where I've tried it a few times. I have one good swing. And then I get out on actual playing a course. I'm like, why the fuck do people do this for 6 hours?
Right.
I'm done after an hour.
Totally. And there's something different. I think different about sort of going into a challenge, being like, this is hard. I'm going to learn it.
Yes.
Versus being like, I'm good at it. Now I'm bad at it.
That's so, what else is there for that? Like, so it's like something that you just get like really lucky at on the first try. And then all of a sudden you're hit with like a very hefty dose of reality.
I don't know. Well, it's also like any sort of like evolution of like our bodies. Like you think about it, like I used to be like a really good runner at one point in my life, then I wasn't. And so it was this feeling of like, now I'm bad at this thing.
Yes.
Or now I've gotten worse.
Yeah.
Versus like, I'm a new learner or taking something on. Like,
yes. You
know, like the sort of like mental story that we tell ourselves.
And also I'm sure at least, well, not sure, but I would think with you, you're not you're not giving yourself like the grace in that situation. Oh. As someone who is like a perfectionist type A, like competitive person, I would, because I quit things that I'm not good at.
Totally.
If I'm not good at it, this is not fun.
Well, what's funny, and this is how you know Robin knows me so well, is that I literally had to tell myself, this is a challenge. I said, for me to then become better at breastfeeding, I have to look at it as a challenge, as like, I want to be one of the best breastfeeders because I'm insane.
Lauren is the person who has the Rocky soundtrack and like montage in her head for anything she does. She's like, I will be the best breastfeeder. I will be the best person who cooks this chicken. I will be the best run of like, and then you're talking to a person who like runs marathons. So it makes sense.
It's terrible. It's like, Mike, I have a strong competitive mindset that can be helpful and can be literally detrimental.
100%. So how is it, like, how has it been going now?
It's getting better now, I think. But there's a moment where, like, pumping, I wasn't producing extra milk when pumping, which was
only
really,
when breastfeeding?
When I'm, like...
Like, can your body tell that it's, like, a fake mouth? Like, it's like, no, I'm not doing this?
Yeah, I think that was part of it. So,
interesting.
Like, I met with a lactation consultant who was talking a lot about the mental aspects of pumping and how, like, basically you need to trick your body into thinking that it's your baby because that's what helps release the oxytocin, which allows your body to release milk.
So what are you doing to do that? Are you like cradling the pump or like what do you do?
It's a great question. So for a while it was reading. Reading is like one thing that like fully turns my body into like fully relaxed mode.
Perfect.
Which is amazing.
What are you reading?
What was I? I was reading like ACOTAR.
Awesome.
Yeah, that was really helping me.
You're talking to someone
Fairies.
Who like dove into the Fourth Wing series with like no abandon.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, so ACOTAR for a while is like fully like putting my body at like complete ease.
Absolutely.
And then I finished the third book and the fourth book is just a little too slow for me. So then honestly, it's been Love Island.
Perfect.
One of the tips that my lactation consultant gave me was to just do something that like, again, puts your body at ease. So she was like, maybe it's save your favorite show to only watch when you're pumping.
Oh.
Or do you have a favorite snack that you only eat when you're pumping? Do you like, so like you can choose something that feels exclusive to when you're doing that activity that makes you feel happy.
Okay.
Another thing that people do is like, you can like look at your baby when you're pumping. I have like two videos of her.
Oh.
Like I like have at the ready when I'm pumping that just like make me feel good.
Yeah.
So it's been really interesting where it's like, yeah, there's that idea, not idea, the science that we know that like your body releases the hormone oxytocin that helps your body release milk.
Okay.
But you have to put your body in a state that can actually happen.
So it's very much so chicken or the egg.
Which is really interesting because like when you have a baby, it's like the baby is touching you. There's warmth. You're holding this baby. So it's easier for your body to feel that way. But for me, I was getting so frustrated pumping because I wasn't producing milk. Like, of course I wasn't producing milk because I was stressed about pumping.
No kidding.
And it's also like the most like to me like inhumane. It's like you have this like vacuum attached to your body.
Yeah,
it's like two pumps. You're feeling like Madonna, but like not in like a sexy Madonna way. And it's just sort of like I'm supposed to then like feel relaxed
and feel
in
love
touch with my body.
No, you, I mean, like I've seen a lot of my friends pump and I grew up in Wisconsin and they look like they are the cows on the dairy farm that are just like hooked up to multiple machines. Also the noises that it makes,
yes, exactly.
I've been watching TV with like a friend who's pumping. I'm like, can you turn that down?
Is there a volume on that thing? Exactly. So it's like, that's the part I think has been challenging is the sort of like the timing of the breastfeeding, knowing that like it happens, you know, she right now she is feeding every like 2 to 3.5 hours.
Okay.
And what I didn't know is that when you talk about the time frames, it's talking about the start of the feed. So if her feed is 40 minutes and let's say she's feeding every 2 hours, then I really
she's
only
feeding
have
an hour, 20 minutes.
Right. And then when you start pumping, at first you're supposed to be pumping after every feed. So your whole life becomes feeding and pumping.
Wow.
Which like that to me was really hard to like get used to what that looks like. And then once she can sleep longer, you still have to be pumping to tell your body to be making milk, because once you stop, that's when your body starts to say, we don't need to make that much milk. I'll be honest, it's one of the things that I like didn't really look into that much.
Yes, because we don't talk about it either.
Right. So it's funny, I was talking to a friend who's also pregnant. She's due in September, and she came over the other day and we were talking about breastfeeding, and she had all these questions, and she was like, I'm really intentional. I want to be really intentional about breastfeeding because it means a lot to me.
Okay.
And I was like, that's really cool, because I wasn't really even thinking about breastfeeding. To be honest, I was like, I figured it was kind of a thing that everyone does pretty easily. I didn't realize how many people struggle with it. I didn't realize like it's really a choice of whether you want to do it or not. I didn't know about, like, all I knew was like it takes up a lot of energy from your body, but that was all I really spent time learning about, because I was busy learning about everything else, or honestly just ignoring it because I was scared.
I was gonna say, I was like, we'll you're talking to the, we're talking to the woman who missed her only virtual meetings with doulas because she was giving birth, because whoops, she saved it for 40 weeks, yeah. 38. But that makes sense. And also, there's so much. One, that you wouldn't necessarily know about it or like know to think so much about it, and yeah, that other women do, because I think it depends also what community you're in, what circles you're in, because there's so much conversation socially around breastfeeding too, where it's like you are bad or you are good depending on what you do. My friends have had to like start off defending their choices to not breastfeed, like ready to fight about it. And like to me, and I'm like, I don't, great formula, love it for
right,
sure.
Right.
They're like, sorry, I have to, like, my mother-in-law comes at me for this. Or like every time I've said this to like a different woman, it's been like, well, you know, you really should breastfeed because X, Y, and Z, you don't bond with your baby. Babies are healthier, da, 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 da. And it's like, this is such a personal choice.
Yeah, there's a lot of shame around it. There's a lot of shame around not breastfeeding.
Yes.
Which I've learned. And
then I would assume that you feel like a failure too.
Totally.
Based on my research with Lena Dunham in the girls episode Latch.
Right, but it's this idea of like your body did this incredible thing of growing and building a human. Your body did this amazing thing of going through labor and pushing it out, mm-hmm, or being whatever set up for the baby to come out. And then your body is supposed to nourish the baby.
Yeah.
Supposed to nourish the baby. And it's like, that's not the case for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so there is this feeling of like defeat if it's not working out well. There's also, I think for me, there's this feeling of like, well, it's natural. You just know how to do it. So I think that's part of what I think for me was a struggle. Again, was like, I felt like I was good right away in the hospital. Then it became hard. And it's this feeling of like, oh, well, I'm supposed to be good at it because I'm a woman.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's really not. It's not that simple for everyone. And it's also this idea too of like, there are things that we have to do to be able to keep our supply up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny. It's like, of course, my like TikTok algorithm is all like early postpartum stuff.
Yeah.
And I get served a lot of content about pumping because I was researching a lot of information about pumping and also using TikTok to see if there was anything there. And a lot of the people who are sharing about their pumping journeys are people who are pumping an insane amount of milk. It's women who are pumping and getting like 8 ounces per boob each session.
What is a normal amount?
There's like no normal, but like 2-ish ounces per breast is like kind of what I'm seeing as being more average, like 2 to 4.
So 8 is wild.
Like for me, I feel really amazing if I get like 3.5.
Okay.
Like to me, it's like 3.5 on each is like a good day. There's a lot of shame around breastfeeding in general. And it's funny, it's like I go back to work next month. I'm like 3.5 weeks from going back to work. And what I've told myself, and I've talked about it with Gabe, and he's again supportive of whatever I want to do. But I was like, hey, I want to try to breastfeed for the first year. That's my goal. If it gets really hard next month and I go back to work, we're just going to do formula. He's like, cool, whatever.
Awesome.
But I was like, I'm saying it out loud. I'm like, I'm not going to stress myself out because there's already a million things to be stressed out about.
You're going to need to repeat this to yourself so much, totally. Knowing you.
Hey, Lauren. Hey, yeah. Future Lauren. Heads up. Reminder. Don't be mad at yourself.
It's all good. It's all okay? Good.
Yeah. So it's like, and I think I also keep saying it out loud to remind myself that too, that it's just like, you know what? It doesn't, there's formula that exists for a reason. There yes. are some babies who never get breast milk. And I'm so lucky she's been able to have it this entire time. And I'm hopeful that we'll be able to keep it going and,
for
and
sure.
rocking on. But if not, it's like the mental health aspect of it. Like you said, it's like for me, that was the most stressful part.
Yeah.
Was literally, it's like sleep is a hard thing, but it's mostly just been like, am I producing enough milk? Like I went to the desert for a couple of days because my in-laws live in the Palm Desert area. And because
I was going to say, for anyone who is not in the LA area, you're going to have to quantify what that means a little yes. bit. So I went to the desert.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the, in the Palm Desert, Palm Springs area.
There we go.
Like 2 hours outside of LA. And it was 104 degrees when we were out there. And part of what your body needs to produce milk is a lot of water. Like you need to be really hydrated.
Oh.
And whenever I go out to the desert area, I used to spend a lot of time out there. So I kind of got used to it. Like I got used to it. Let me rephrase this. I would get used to my body not getting used to it, meaning every time I would go, within the first like 2 days, I was so dehydrated, no matter how much water I was drinking, no matter how many electrolytes I was drinking. It's just like, for some reason, my body was just like
really
not vibing with it. And so when I got there, I was drinking a ton of water because I knew I had to breastfeed, but I was barely producing enough milk is what it felt like.
Okay.
And that was so stressful.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, is my baby going to have enough milk? Is she like, she was like, felt like she was overly hungry. I met with my consultant. We were figuring out different solutions. But that sort of stress of like, oh, I'm not able to produce enough food for my baby was really terrifying.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that was also part of like, maybe not what triggered this sort of like sensitivity around my milk supply and being able to, you know, be quote unquote good at breastfeeding.
Right.
But that scare, I think, has never really left my brain. And so there's always, I think, this sort of feeling of like, am I eating enough protein to produce enough milk? Am I drinking enough water? So all day,
I'm just thinking about your milk supply.
Nourishing my body for the milk supply.
Wow.
It's just like, it's so hard to turn off.
Is there, so part of that sounds incredibly, I mean, most of that sounds incredibly taxing psychologically.
Yeah.
And then, but there's another part that like I'm hearing that I think is interesting, which is all day I'm thinking about like, the only thing I'm focused on, am I eating enough protein? Am I drinking enough water? Am I doing this? But it's all in service of keeping your baby alive, which is also like very beautiful where yeah. it's like, it is, yes, it is focused around like your milk supply. And I'm not to say like, oh, it's great for you. Like yeah, it's yeah. about your baby. But I'm like, oh my God, like that's such a shift in your mentality to be yeah. only focused on this one thing so that this other one thing is thriving
totally.
And healthy. And it's like, you're giving up every piece of like your own kind of like airspace right now for CJ.
Totally. And it's so interesting because it's like, it's funny. We were talking, Robin and I were talking when we first got down here today, talking about like just bodies and how, like I was saying how I've been feeling like the body just feels like,
interesting because she walked in and Lauren, if you saw Lauren when she was pregnant at all, if you want any indication of it, go look at our, go look at the photo for the podcast. She was just belly out all the time, crop top, like everywhere. It was amazing, like stylish, cool. And she shows up here and she kind of has like a little crop on as well. And I just stop and point. And I'm like, is that your postpartum stomach? She's like, oh, yeah. I was like, you have abs again already. Like, you look better than I do.
Which is very sweet of Robin. And I was saying, it was so nice. I, like, needed to hear that because I was feeling so, like, disconnected from my body this week. And just feeling like there's this feeling that I'm trying to get rid of. It's like, I don't want to go back to my body the way it was before because I physically can't.
Correct.
But I do want to feel still strong and feel fit. And I don't feel like as fit as I was, which is fine and makes sense. But it's this very interesting thing of like, I was talking about it with a friend the other day, this feeling of like, I don't feel like I can take some of like the extreme measures I used to take to get fit, which is a good thing, to be honest, because yep. it used to be too extreme for me at some points.
Yep.
But I can't do that because I need to be making milk. I need to have enough fuel for my baby.
Yeah.
So there's something kind of like really beautiful and kind of like trippy about this sense of like, what is beautiful? What is like a beautiful body that I'm being I'm constantly having that conversation in my brain mm-hmm. because I'm a woman.
Yeah.
And we can't not have that conversation, I think, because of what society has done to us.
Yeah.
But there's this really interesting feeling of like, I get served all these videos of like these postpartum, you know, workouts and diets. And I'm like, I can't do a postpartum diet. I can't cut calories right now. I need to be focusing on having like the right fuel to make milk to keep this thing that I'm obsessed with alive. And so there's this really like, I haven't like fully thought this out yet. I'm sort of like still kind of like in the middle of figuring out what it means to me. But it is this really interesting challenge of like, oh yeah, I want to go back to like being a little like toned mini, but like that's not what I'm being called to do right now.
I love that.
Kind of amazing.
I love that so much. Yes, it's both beautiful and I have to imagine like a psychological trip.
Yeah.
Because we, as women in society, in culture, in America, have spent now like what, like 35, 34 years looking at pop culture and media and being told that like we should be a size two and spending our lives dieting and over exercising to get to that like one good look.
Right.
Whereas now like you have more to care about than just a look.
Right. Right. Yeah. And it's this hard thing too, where it's like every part of me, like I feel like I know the right thing to say. The right thing to say is like, it doesn't matter or I don't care. But it's like, I'm fighting with the fact that I do kind of care and I'm trying to let go of it. And I think that's part of like the conversation that I don't feel like we have that often.
I love that. Is there a way for you to say like, I do care to a certain extent, but I care differently now and like have that be the acceptance?
I think so. Yeah. And I love that. And I think what I'm trying to focus on right now too is just like strength.
Mm-hmm.
Like I want to focus on my body feeling strong.
Yeah.
And so it's like the workouts that I'm doing are more about like building muscle versus like losing fat.
Yeah.
It's like more about like, it's like lifting heavy weights at home.
Yeah.
Because like that's something I can do. And then it's like eating in a way that's like fuel. I'm like eating a lot and it's awesome. But it's
sounds great.
Which is great. But it's like, and it's changing the sort of the narrative around that of like, for me, it's always been like food is fuel. Like that's how I ensure that like I'm eating in a way that's like actually maintaining what I want my body to do versus feeling like I need to like just eat very little to try to cut down a size or anything like that.
Yeah.
So it's been, but it's really interesting. It's this sort of like, I think there's this sense of, for me, there's a sense of like, okay, you give birth. It's going to be a shit show for a few months as you figure out like sleep and taking care of a baby and whatever. And honestly, it'll be a shit show forever. But like,
for sure,
there's this feeling of like a shit show when you figure that out. Your body recovers, and then you can go back to getting your body into, like, whatever shape you want it to be in. That's what I thought.
Mm.
Not even close.
I've never thought that.
Really?
No. I mean, and I think that, like, I've seen just, like, I mean, I grew up in the Midwest, and I didn't grow up in L.A. or Beverly Hills. Like, I saw normal bodies around me all the time, you know? Yeah. And I know you're not from L.A. either, but I guess, like, I've always been hyper aware of the fact that once you have a child, once you have a baby and you grow that baby inside of you, that your body is no longer yours and it's never going to necessarily be the same thing. I mean, like my mom and people around me didn't like walk around in bikinis with six packs to like post three or four kids.
Yeah.
But I also like we're inundated again with in culture and society with like bounce back bodies on tabloids. Like we grew up like shaming Jessica Simpson for what she looked like after having kids or any or if she wasn't a size two. Or like the conversation is around like who was able to like lose the weight the fastest and get the abs back 6 months later or a month later.
Right.
And like, remember all the Victoria's Secret stories about like, oh, I just gave birth a month ago.
Yes. Yes.
What?
Right. Totally.
Don't put that out there.
Right. Right.
Don't tell people that.
Right. No, it's exactly that. And it's like, but it's also, I feel like with the world that we're into with social media, it's like my whole Instagram feed and all that shit is just like people who have like bounced back so quickly that I think, for me, I always had this sense of like, oh, I'll be able to bounce back quickly. I think also too, like you're mentioning, it's all about like the circles that you're in. Like I have some friends who have had kids. I'm kind of like one of the first in my circle who have done it.
You're one of the first in my circle in LA for sure. So different friends in the Midwest have had kids.
Okay.
So I think like different timelines depending on where you are.
Geographically
is pretty normal, but also I don't have. Also, most of my circle out here is gay men, so not a lot of childbirth in that within those circles.
I think it's like it's this interesting sort of like I'm like, oh, I'm like learning on the fly of like what I thought the expectation was is not quite how it's been. I'm curious for you too, like with you having like known that and sort of seen that growing up, does that impact how you think about pregnancy, postpartum,
You know,
in general,
I would say probably like in my 20s, it was one of the things that I would have like on my list at the ready about like why I was on the fence about having kids. Mm. Now I would say, well, I like care about and value my body as well. Like you and I both share that like we like prioritize fitness and like healthy eating and like love working out and all these things. And it is something that like I take pride in for both like on a physical side and on a mental side. It's like my mental health is so much better when I am working out, when I feel good, when I'm eating good, like that translates. So that was a long-winded way to say, I think it used to be something that I would care about. And now, I mean, not that I don't care about it, but it's not like the highest on my list. Mm. It's not as though like, oh, I'm not sure if I want to have kids because I don't know if I like my body the way it is right now.
Yeah.
What's more important to me in terms of the decision around having kids is how it will affect my life as a whole and the great unknown, the giant question mark around mm-hmm. that as someone who has never felt 100% called to motherhood in terms of like, I've never felt like, oh, I absolutely want to be a mom. There's so many of my friends who are like, yeah. I've always known I wanted to be a mom. Yeah. I've always wanted children. And I have so many friends who are like, when they see babies coming down the street, they're like, look at that. Like, I'm that way with dogs. I'm not that way with children. Yeah. I love my friends' kids, but I've never like sought out hanging out with babies.
Yeah.
And so my biggest what if is this idea around giving up a life that I know that I love right now mm-hmm. for a thing, a person that I know I will love the person. I know I will love the baby if I have a baby, but I'm not 100% certain I would love my life as a mother. Mm. And everything that goes along with that in society right now, which I mean the expectation on women,
yep.
the mental load that women take on so much more than men, even if you have the best male partner in the world,
yes.
even just listen to what we were talking about based on your life cycling around feeding and breastfeeding and pumping. Gabe is the most helpful husband and partner and father on the planet. Gabe can't help with that.
Totally.
And there's also expectations around women yeah. and motherhood that are so different than they are for men that as like the like raging, fiery, liberal feminist that I am, infuriate me.
Yeah.
Where it's like the conversation around men when they take their child for the weekend when their wife goes out of town or something. Oh my God, can you believe that? What a great dad. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, look at yeah. him. He's so good with it. It's like a mom would never get the praise for picking up that gauntlet. You know what I mean?
Totally, totally. I so resonate with that in the sense of like the fear of resentment mm-hmm. for me was like one of the biggest things that I was like, I need to work through if and when we decide to have a family.
Because, I get that.
Because of a lot of what you're saying is a sense of like, I know it's going to be fully uneven. And Gabe, again, to your point, Gabe is like hero complex to the max. Like, dude will do anything to help anyone. It's the best thing in the world. I always say, if anyone's going to be partnered with someone and you want to have kids, marry a hero complex.
100%.
Because they'll do it. Gabe literally, like at one point, actually, this happened many times when breastfeeding was getting hard. Gabe was like, what if I take the baby and put her on your breast? I'll calm her. I'm going to calm her down and I'll physically put her on. And I'm like, I don't need that much help.
But like, babe, it's not how that right? works.
But like, that's like how helpful he wants
to be. We love Gabe.
He's the best, like the absolute best. But yeah, it's this feeling of like, I know that I think as humans, we're all wired to be resentful. I struggle with resentment. The feeling of resentment quite a bit.
Yeah.
Just because of certain things I think that I saw in my parents' relationship growing up. There are aspects that Gabe and I have had to work through in mm-hmm. the 7 years we've been together where like there are just moments where I feel resentful. And it's the thing that I think I fear. I have a strong fear of that existing heavily in our relationship because I see it in my parents' relationship.
That
so that's what it is.
Is a really solid statement. How much therapy did it take you to come to that, or did you come to it yourself?
It was probably a lot of therapy. I feel like, honestly, also reading Becoming, which everyone's read, Michelle Obama's book, but like when she talked about, I'll never forget, there's a chapter where she talked about when, you know, Barack became president and things were so busy and she was like, and I would get so mad at him for going to the gym because I'm so busy, I have all this stuff to do, and he would go to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's like, and then I just realized I just have to say I'm going to the gym and just go to the gym.
Yep.
And like, there was that chapter and that moment always stuck in my brain too, of this sense of like, I can have the mentality of like, well, why can Gabe or someone else get away with doing all these things and I can't.
Mm-hmm.
Versus like, okay, just make sure you're taking the time and creating the space to do the thing that you
can,
need to do.
You can do the thing too.
Right. But it's hard because I'm not wired that way.
Yeah.
And so I would say like, yeah, I've always had a strong fear of resentment.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that when you go into the aspects of raising a family from pregnancy and after that, it's going to be so uneven. That resentment is so likely to spark and to fully like manifest within a relationship. But that for me was a really big part of like being, just kind of fearful of us having a family. Like I loved the idea of like having like a big group of people that you want to hang out with. But similar to you, I never had this calling of like, I'm dying to be a mom. Like I have a lot of friends who are like, that's the one thing I know I was put on this planet to do.
Yep.
Friends who are like, I can't wait to experience being pregnant, to experience birth, to experience that. I've never felt that. Not against it. I think I was just so career focused that like my brain was focused on other things.
Yeah.
So I had a similar sort of feeling of like, okay, how do I want to make sure I'm ready. As ready as you can be.
Right.
But part of it for me was really just like, how do I ensure that like Gabe and I have such good communication that we can work through something like this where it's going to be not even close to being an equal amount of weight that we have to give to this decision.
And it's again, it is no flack against Gabe or men who are out here being great partners and doing their best. And there's so many who are, and there's also so many who aren't. And I think we've both seen it both ways.
Yeah.
But I also think that we, on that note, we're coming up in a generation where now you and I have the opportunity and access to information and education and therapy around this to actually take a step back and be thoughtful about that decision rather than just diving into the expectation that, all right, you graduated college, now you find someone to date, then you marry that person, then you have a family. That is what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what many people do. And that's incredible. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But it's not the path for everyone anymore. And I think the more that we're having realistic conversations about what it is that goes into the decision around deciding to have a family, to have a baby, and to be parents, not just to like play catch with your kid, but to be parents for 18 years, there is so much that goes into that that I just want to be incredibly thoughtful about. I have a friend, Kurt, who is gay, and him and his husband were deciding whether or not they wanted to have kids. And they were also very much so on the fence about this.
Yeah.
And he approached it the way like I plan to approach it because I'm also on the fence about it. I was back home in Wisconsin this weekend visiting my mom and my I have an adopted sister of sorts, Lexi, and she was there with her kids. And we were like at my neighborhood pool where we all did swim meets. And I was like, oh, my God, it was the first time in my life I felt like called to have a baby.
Mm.
But I think it was this aspect of community too.
Yeah.
Where I don't have that same community in LA of like my family, my parents there to help. That like my baby, if I had a baby here, wouldn't have cousins, like same cousins that I have. My child would have a very different childhood than I had.
Yeah.
And that's a beautiful thing, but it would and could be. But it's also kind of a sad thing for me because I had such an amazing community-focused childhood in like suburban America. And we could always move and do that. And like all things are on the table. But I think if I lived in Wisconsin, I would be so much more on the yes side than I am now. But back to Kurt, when he was deciding, knowing that obviously as a gay couple, it costs hundreds of thousands of dollars to have a child, depending on which way you want to do it, whether you're doing IVF as a lesbian couple or you're doing surrogacy or adoption, so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And so just one more reason that people who are gay do not choose that lifestyle, okay, folks?
Right.
but he did, I think he and Brooks, or maybe just him, I don't remember, did a full poll of like every parent in their life to ask them, would you do this again if you had the choice?
Wow.
Including their own parents. And one of their parents said no.
Damn.
Right?
I love the honesty.
100%.
That's incredible, actually.
It was one of their dads. And it was like, with all due respect, like, I love you so much, but like, no, so hard.
Yeah.
And like, I think that's something that I think about. I'm afraid of regret.
Yeah.
And what I know to be true right now is that what I need to accept is that one way or the other, I'm going to have to mourn the life that I didn't choose.
Totally.
If I decide to have a baby, which again, we're like 50-50, I don't know. I will have to mourn the life of being like a dual income, no kids, like can leave whenever I want. I can go to Paris next weekend. Yeah. Can't do that with a baby. You right. can't do that with when your kid is six and has soccer practice. But also if I decide not to have children, I'm going to have to mourn like the relationships that I see my friends have with their kids mm-hmm. and like mourn that feeling when I go back home and like really wish that I could have the same thing that my mom had,
yeah.
but know that my life is incredibly different. And like, I am starting to see now that either path I choose, there's going to be a grief associated with the path left on the table.
Totally.
And I'm going to have to work through that either way. And it's just like, which one do I feel called more to, or which one is less scary, or like which one falls into my lap? I don't know.
Right, right. It makes a ton of sense. Right. It's like, and it's so interesting that there is this sort of like societal expectation, which then I feel like adds an extra weight when it comes to making this decision.
Entirely. I feel defensive when people ask me, depending on who the person is sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're often is like, oh, so when are you having a baby? And it's like, I don't know if I want a baby. What do right. you mean you don't want a baby?
Right,
it's like,
right.
I'm like, have you seen what it takes to have a baby?
Right.
And to be a mom these days? And also, not to mention the financial strain that goes along with parenthood right now that was not there in the 80s, 90s, and early aughts.
Totally. And our generation, what we've gone through financially because of the fact of when the recessions are with student loans, like we're economically just not set up the way that other generations were. And just to survive, like just to survive, it's dramatic, but like
just to survive. Just to survive.
But like we can't buy homes.
No. I was going to say, it's like you're talking, you as my friend, one of my like first friends here in LA who has a child and is having a baby is talking about that baby in your apartment.
Yes.
Whereas when I was in Wisconsin, everyone had like a 4-bedroom little ranch house that they bought for $50,000.
Right, right.
So it's different.
Yeah, it's a different world. And like, I think generationally where we are, like our relationship with money, we don't have a lot of it. We're used to it always going away. And so the idea then of like adding something to our lives, that's a really big expense, can also feel kind of irresponsible. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I've had friends say that and I'm like, I totally get it. It's a really, it's not a small decision.
No, it's not. It's the biggest decision you're ever going to make. And lately, especially since going back home and feeling that I had a conversation with Harrison when we went on a road trip last week to pick up our new dog. And, but I was like, hey, I just want to be honest with like what I'm feeling right now. Like, cause I kept joking, like I would like make him go on walks with me around the neighborhood. And I'd be like, we could get that house. We could do this. We could do this. He'd be like, can you please stop talking about moving back to Madison, Wisconsin? You've never said this once in your life.
Interesting.
And now all of a sudden you're like you're looking up real estate and like putting our kid that doesn't exist in swim classes already. I was like, yeah, doesn't that sound awesome? He's like, he's amazing. He goes, what phase of your cycle are you in? Cause last time I was doing that, I was in my luteal phase.
Yeah.
And I was ovulating, so I was like, I wonder if that's what it is. Like, I'm being called to like have a baby when you're ovulating.
It would make a ton of sense.
Yes, entirely. But I had a conversation with him when we got back, and I was like, hey, I know we were joking around a lot about that, but I wanted you to know that like I'm not consumed with this thought right now, but it's taking up a lot of brain space for me about like which choice do I make. I need to decide. I need to make the choice. And the thing is, like, I don't need to decide right now.
Yeah.
One, we just got engaged. We're getting married in 2 years. At that point, I'll be 36. I'm very happy having a baby. Like in my later 30s, I froze my eggs when I was 30.
Amazing.
I've got 44 of them sitting on ice.
Let's go.
Shout out, like, successful experience with that. I'm very, very lucky that I have access to that.
Yeah.
To be able to even like be having the conversation on those terms. Ooh, sorry. Mm-hmm. To be able to be having the conversation on those terms. But I still feel anxious about it right now. And this is like a new feeling for me because before I leaned 80% no.
Yeah.
And now I would say I'm 50-50. And my head's always on a swivel looking at different people's lives, being like, oh, if I do that, will I have that life? Or if I do that, will I have that life?
Interesting. Do you think there's any correlation to the fact that you recently got engaged? Or like, I'm curious, like if there's any sort of circumstances that you think are sparking this to be a more consistent thought?
That's a good question, therapist Lauren. Thank you. You know, my guess is probably I haven't thought too hard about it. I need to get back into journaling and I need to get back into like digging into my brain space a little bit more. I feel like I've put it, I don't know about you, but if I take a long break from journaling and writing, it is like getting, it's like going on your first run again.
Yes.
Like even just like looking at my journal sitting on the side of my bed, like my eye starts to twitch. I'm like, do I have to tell it about the last 7 months or can I start from today?
Right. And it's the thing, I go through this thing where I'm like, I know I'll feel 1,000 times better if I just do it.
Right.
And the journal is there. My favorite pen is there.
Yes. I have my favorite pen too.
But I'm like, do I have the energy
right
to move the wrist?
That's
so hard.
I really do feel the wrist pain thing where I was like, I feel like if I could be like a Virginia Woolf or something like that, yes. I was like, I was meant to be that. But I'm like, she's so tired with that hand. Also, Jesus.
I don't know if you go through this. I also like take pride in how nice my handwriting is.
Not me. My handwriting is dirt trash. And you can tell when it gets to like the bottom of the page or the entry starts to like end. It's like, sure. All right, she's done with this.
Yeah, that's mine.
It's illegible by the end.
Mine like fades, but it's also this feeling of like, I love how beautiful my journal is. And it's so obnoxious.
Really?
But like, I think as a Libra, I'm so obsessed with things being like aesthetically pleasing.
100 We should post a photo of like a benign page in your journal.
I would be honored to share how beautiful my show is. It's like the one.
We'll put this on the in-face social accounts, okay, everyone?
It's just one thing I'm like really proud of. My mom has really beautiful handwriting, and so I think she taught me to have beautiful handwriting.
Damn, I didn't know this about you, okay? You need to write me a letter.
I should write you a letter. It's to the point where in third grade, my teacher, I'll never forget, we were like prepping third grade. Fourth grade, who knows? At one point we were prepping.
Did you just like hate on yourself for tripping up about whether it was third grade or fourth grade?
Crazy.
I can't remember my entire childhood. I'll be like, anything. I once was a child and this happened.
I just remember we were prepping for like doing standardized tests and there's the essay section. And my teacher said, hey, Lauren, because the essay writing portion is timed, I would advise you to stop writing so flowery because you're just going to waste time. Like all the little extra loops and flips you're doing, like, I wouldn't do that. It's going to impact your testing.
Were you insulted or complimented when she said that?
Fully complimented. Honored. And guess what? I will still write my essay in time.
And you know what?
Be beautiful.
I bet you got a 36 on the writing portion of the ACT, baby. Okay.
It's just like one of those things where like, again, this is so Libra of me. Like I appreciate beautiful things so much that
that's
like,
why you love looking at me.
It's exactly
for multiple hours
it's
a week.
Why it is. But I just like I love something aesthetically pleasing that like it enhances my experience.
Yeah.
So like I'm sure like subconsciously I'm like the person who's gonna be editing this essay is gonna go into
it. Oh, I thought you were gonna say the person who's gonna be like reading this posthumous journal.
Oh no.
I was like, okay, you're all right.
That's wild. Love that.
Okay, Jimmy Buffett. Like, wait, he's alive, isn't he?
I think so.
Oh, I should have used someone else. Virginia Woolf again.
Virginia Woolf. Whoever's reading the essay is going to go into it with like more, they'll be more likely to give me a better grade
if
because it looks nice.
That, there's a lot to be said about society. There's more to talk about with that one. Yeah. We can touch on that in another one.
But anyway, I think we got into that because we're talking about journaling. Oh, yeah. And so I also like want my journal to look pretty. So if I'm really tired.
Yes.
And I can't put effort into making sure my handwriting is nice. And then I'm like, I can't possibly be journaling.
I don't like it. Is so funny the little things that take 5 minutes that truly make your day so much better. For me, it's meditating and it's mm-hmm. journaling in the morning and it's reading in the morning.
Yeah.
And I wake up early. That's like my sacred space. But I wake up less early now that I'm in a relationship where the man lives with me and is in bed with me.
Oh, totally.
What do you want to like giggle and cuddle? And I'm
being cozy is so
totally.
Nice. Totally. Yeah.
Yes. And I also like I wake up like an hour and a half before him. So what am I going to like turn on my light and start my red light mask and like burn my sage while he's sleeping? He would let me. But
honestly,
like,
you should. It's kind of a vibe.
He would be totally fine with it, which is very sweet. But it's less of your own space because in my old apartment I had this beautiful one-bedroom apartment alone in West Hollywood. It was awesome. It had these giant windows that like opened out onto the street that you like, they were French windows. I would wake up alone in my room at like 5:30 in the morning, immediately light a candle, maybe turn on some like lo-fi jazz, open those windows. The sun is just starting to creep up. I'm alone. Let me say that again. I'm alone. It's awesome. And then you just, you drink your coffee in bed, you journal, you do whatever you want. You're alone. I don't have that anymore, you know? And there's something to be said about being alone in the morning. Sorry, Air. I love you so much.
Have you thought about having like separate bedrooms? Is that like a thing you talk about?
No, because here's the thing. It's like I understand people who want that. I love sleeping with him and going to bed with him.
Yeah.
But the mornings are like I would love it if he got up an hour before me, but that's me asking him to get up at like 4:45.
Right, right.
And like had it, like if he had his, if he was like, I go to the gym every morning at 5:30, I would be like, we are perfect.
Right, right, right.
But no, he's a normal person who's like sleeps in until 6 or 7.
Yeah.
So it's only like, it's only the morning time for me where I'm like, that is like my zen time. It used to be like the one, like I hung my hat of personality traits on being this like morning vibe person.
Yeah. I feel like we bonded over that.
Yes.
Cause I feel so similar. Well, and it's funny because now that like my life is so different, I don't have my mornings anymore.
Yeah.
Because when I wake up, it's usually I'm waking up because Carmen needs to eat.
Yeah.
Or when I wake up, I have to pump right away.
Yeah.
And so I'm going through this really interesting phase of like mourning that. I'm mourning the mornings. Like truly, I'm mourning having the morning.
We need to write a poem about this because that sounds like a Rupi Kumar quote.
Yeah, yeah, truly.
In some way.
Yeah, it's really bizarre. And so it's like now I'm trying to like because I'm staying up till around midnight, which for me is very late.
Oh.
I'm like a go to bed early type of girl.
That might as well be 3 a.m. midnight.
Yeah,
is
totally.
So late.
That's how I feel.
Yes.
So now that's like slowly becoming my sacred time.
Yeah.
Because it's my alone time.
And oh, so you're shifting.
I'm sort of figuring out like, what is that going to be? But then again, when I go back to work, I kind of need to have that time to like ground before I'm on.
Yes.
And like producing anything for anyone else in exchange for money.
100%. Capitalism.
So, capitalism. Hate you. But I have to play by your rules.
We have to abide in some ways.
But that's been an interesting sort of like chapter, just as you were talking about this sort of like grieving what life was,
yeah,
what life could be.
Yes.
Part of me grieving what life was,
yeah,
is grieving just having like knowing that I have the mornings to reset, have the mornings to ground, have the mornings to like do the things to fuel me throughout the day. I don't quite have that anymore. And so learning how to like readjust that has been a really interesting challenge.
And that's not to say you'll never have it again,
yeah,
right? Like totally. There's like when Carmen is older, obviously like things will ebb and flow and shift and you'll find different vibes. But I can imagine that would be really hard as someone who is mourning the mornings for even just having a partner, not a baby who is reliant on me as lifeblood. So
totally.
You know what we should talk about though are some of the stats around postpartum.
Yeah.
Because we were... Hold on one second, actually. Let me just...
Yeah, so we were looking at some of the statistics around postpartum, things that people might not know about, but then also just in general, like, what are the things that a lot of women go through that just aren't talked about? Like, for instance, like, night sweats are super common for women who have gone through postpartum, and it's because your hormones are, like, going through all of this change, and, you know, just at different levels than wherever it used to. It's super common to wake up drenched in sweat.
Nice.
I had no idea. I was waking up drenched in sweat like multiple times a night. I think my phone's... I thought
that was happening when you were hitting your fist because it was timed to that. I was like, I don't know what is reverberating on your... Or like what kind of superhero you are, but that's...
That's amazing.
I was like, stop doing that.
But yeah, like for instance, there's like intense night sweats are a very common thing. Had no idea.
Hair loss.
Hair loss is a really big one.
Yeah. It apparently, it peaks at 3 to 4 months.
Awesome. Starts tomorrow for me.
Yeah. Lauren and I were talking about this and doing like a little bit of like a research online before this episode. I was like, oh wow. It peaks at 3 to 4 months. She's like, I'm 3 months tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll have half my hair by the time we meet next. So enjoy it while it lasts.
When we were talking about postpartum depression though, which is something that you and I opened the episode with, talking about how many people would refer to just postpartum depression as postpartum, which is wrong. That's incorrect.
Yeah.
But 1 in 5 mothers experience postpartum mood disorders, which is not just depression. I think so often people talk about just depression. I was introduced to this concept while watching Vanderpump Rules. Sheena Shea, everyone, suffered from postpartum OCD, where she wouldn't let her child get watched by anyone other than her mom. But that also might have had something to do with the fact that she found out that her husband had an affair on her while she was pregnant.
Yeah, that could be part of it. But no, the idea that the sort of like the intrusive thoughts, the OCD, like
yep.
The intrusive thoughts are a big one that I am battling with really? A lot. I know a lot of people who, yeah.
Yeah.
Suffer from it. This idea of like, and I do suffer from anxiety. Mm-hmm. Like I take medication for it. And so I was worried a little bit that like I would have a more extreme version of that in postpartum. I would say I'm handling it pretty well, but one of the things that's really challenging for me is like my brain will jump to the extreme of every situation.
Interesting.
And it's this like it's a lot of like catastrophizing that I'm doing that like I learned about in therapy years ago, which has been great to sort of be able to say like, oh, I'm jumping to an extreme conclusion that doesn't have to happen.
Yeah.
But I'm doing that so much now because there is for me this feeling of like, oh, I have to protect this baby.
Yeah.
Like for 9 months, it was only me protecting this baby. Now it's me and my husband, but it feels like it's still mostly my job.
Right.
Even though he's helping a ton, it's like there's this like the stakes and the pressure of that are so hard to not think about that all of a sudden it's like everything feels extreme. And that
I get that.
It's so hard to turn off.
That makes so much sense to me. Yeah. I'm also, and one thing that we don't talk in relation to anxiety is the fact that people who do suffer from anxiety disorders previous to getting pregnant, there's oftentimes medications that they are on to help with that. And to help mitigate or balance whatever it may be, mood stabilizers, whether it's an SSRI, an antidepressant, you cannot take every single medication while you're pregnant and while you're breastfeeding. So if you are someone who suffers from mental health disorders or struggles with mental health in a way that requires you to be helped with medication, you do need to think about what that is going to do.
Yes.
Or how that's going to be affected by pregnancy and postpartum.
100%. That's one of the best pieces of advice that a friend gave me.
Really?
A friend who suffered a lot with depression during pregnancy and after.
Oh.
She said, there's two things I would advise anyone who wants to get pregnant to do. She was like, one, find the workout that you can do throughout your pregnancy.
Okay.
Because most of the time, once you get pregnant, your doctor's going to say, keep moving your body. And it's hard to then like fall in love with something that you can do for a while. So she was like, find a workout that you love that you can maintain.
What was yours?
Mine was Legree Pilates.
Okay.
Obsessed with it. And then two, she was like, do whatever you can to figure out what your mental health plan is.
Okay.
Which I thought was such good advice. She was like, I wish I had gotten my mental health sort of in check, meaning I had all the tools to know how to handle it before I'd gotten pregnant. And so and that to me was such good advice because that's actually when I was like, okay, what do I need to do to make sure I'm feeling good? And I decided to go on medication and I chose medication that I knew I could maintain and keep during pregnancy and throughout breastfeeding.
And this is
really
on-
lucky.
Access to education and healthcare.
Yeah.
I think that's so brilliant. As someone, I am not currently on any medication for anxiety or depression, but anxiety and depression run in my family rampantly. Mm-hmm. And so I've been introduced to the fact that people use medication to help since as long as I can remember.
Yeah.
And I am just so thankful that more people now are talking about it.
Yeah.
And especially women. I have a friend who was on an anxiety medication that she couldn't be on when she was pregnant, and she was pregnant at work, and she continued to have these wild panic attacks, massive ones, like absolutely like mind-blowing panic attacks. And she wound up taking some space from work because she said, like, I can't, it's so troublesome. I cannot be here unmedicated right now.
Yeah.
Like, to help with that.
Gosh, it's so hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a friend who had to stop taking medication, and instantly when she had her baby, she did not feel connected to her baby and went into an extreme depression and did not have the medication to help, which happens to a lot of people.
Yep.
But to like hear the sort of like the instant sort of like flip of a switch of like all those hormones, how they can just rush right away.
Yeah.
And to have that feeling as soon as your life is feeling like it's taking a turn.
Yeah.
That's, I can't even imagine.
Because what are the rush of hormones that you have after you give birth? Because isn't it like you're the highest high and then it's like 48 hours later, you're like the lowest low?
Yeah, there's like a thing called the postpartum blues that I learned about, which is like the first 2 weeks after postpartum. So what they say is like for the first 2 weeks, it's really common to like be crying out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You're so exhausted because you're not sleeping. Obviously, also you're recovering from like going through something extremely physical that's challenging.
Physical trauma for the most part.
Right. And so there's what I learned was that, like, the first 2 weeks are the postpartum blues, which means it's going to be a lot of ups and downs.
Which is also a euphemism that the patriarchy has assigned to just, like, straight-up depression, too. Right, like, right. I've got the baby blues. It's right. Like, babe, that's called postpartum depression. And, like, let's call it what it is to stop minimizing women's mental health struggle as well.
Right, right. And so, and it's, like, it's this thing where it's, like, they say it's, like, no matter what, you're going to experience this.
Yes.
Most likely. And then if you continue to experience it after the 2 weeks, that's when it's like, we should take a stronger look at this. That's sort of like the timeline that they sort of say is like, if it's after 2 weeks, then like, do we talk about therapy? Do we talk about medication? Do we talk about like, this is probably depression.
Yes.
And so how are we making sure that we have the tools to help combat that?
You know what? Shout out like having the foresight and thinking of it like to your friend about like saying like, I wish I would have done this. Like I had the tools, I had everything. And I don't know. More women should talk about this.
Totally agree. Like I felt so lucky to go into it being like, okay, I know that journaling helps me. I know that walking helps me. I'm also on a really low dose of medication that I can up if I need to.
Yeah.
So I went into it being scared about postpartum depression and anxiety because having suffered from it before, it sucks.
Yeah.
Don't want to do it again, especially when there's a thing to take care of.
100%.
But to be able to go into it knowing, like, if it happens, I know how to help.
My therapist calls that resourcing yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's this, yeah, similar. It's like I kept telling myself, I'm like, I've never been more equipped for this.
Yeah. I love that.
So no matter what happens, I've never been more equipped than I am.
Oh,
right now.
What a great way to walk into like a complete unknown feeling like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, yeah, I kind of like trick myself into doing a lot of things with that one phrase. Never been more equipped.
I've never been more equipped. I'm gonna start saying that for the things that I'm doing in my life when I feel completely unequipped.
Yeah, totally.
I've never been more equipped. Let's talk about one other thing. Well, we can talk about more, but one thing I wanted to talk about is the acute physical trauma that your vagina goes through right afterwards. Mm-hmm. And like the spray bottle and the diapers and the antiseptic wipes. Like that is what I think I told you. I like leaned over to Harrison in the middle of the night and I was like, look at this TikTok. Do you know what'll happen to my body if I have a baby? Yeah. And it was a man setting up a bathroom for his postpartum wife. Shout out. More men should do this.
Yeah, do that.
And it was setting up like the diapers and the pads and the spray bottle and the antiseptic wipe and like the like lidocaine for something. And I was like, what is all of that?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what is that?
I mean, it's kind of crazy. Like, I also didn't really know much about it. Like, I started getting served stuff online when I was later in my pregnancy about, like, all the prep you can do for postpartum.
Yeah.
It was, like, taking these pads, and you put in witch hazel, and you add aloe, and you put them in the freezer, and you have them prep for when you get home.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, am I supposed to be doing all of that?
It looked like witchcraft to me, this man setting this up.
Yes.
He's like, he's doing all that. And I'm like, what are these things? What is he doing, and what do you use those for? Why are you putting that in the freezer? Right.
And it's interesting because I went into birth, trying to have few expectations.
Okay.
Because I know that, like, things can just happen.
Yes.
Right? So, like, everyone's like, what's your birth plan? Do you want to do an epidural? Do you not? Are you open to a C? Like, I'm open to anything.
Yeah.
Because if I go in there and my doctor is like, hey, you should do X, I don't want to fight it. I don't want to be disappointed.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go with the flow again. Sometimes I go with the flow too much, which leads to me not having enough birth prep ahead of time. But
no doula, no birth plan, no problem.
But for me, there's like, I've always kind of been this way of like, if I sometimes have expectations, then it allows me to be disappointed versus me going in with a really open mind sort of allows me to just sort of be in the moment.
Yeah.
So it's funny because I was seeing all this stuff about how to prep for postpartum and I was like, the plan is to have a vaginal birth, but my mom had 2 C-sections.
Oh.
So I was like, there's a chance that I might have to get a C-section. And then in that case, does it make sense that I buy all this shit to prep for a vaginal birth? You know what I mean?
You didn't want to waste the money.
Well, I think it was more emotional than anything.
Like, I can't buy witch hazel. What am I going to do with witch hazel if I have it afterwards?
But it was like, am I going to prep all this stuff and have this like whole station set up if I'm not even going to need it? So I got this on my registry. There's this like postpartum survival kit.
Okay.
That Freedom Mom has. And I put that on my registry and a friend got it for me. And it has like the basics of all of that. Like your peri bottle, 4 pairs of like disposable underwear, some more witch hazel. I was like, that's what I'm going to have. I'm like, I'll have this little like kit ready in case I need it. If I don't need it, I'll bring it back, whatever. But so all I have to say is like, I didn't do a ton of prep for that at all.
Okay.
Because I was like, I don't know what it's going to be just because what I learned too is like the way you recover from a C-section versus vaginal birth is very, very different.
Yes.
So I went into it hoping for vaginal, not expecting it. It was a vaginal delivery. So I gave birth. Then I had to go to the bathroom. And walking is crazy because I had the epidural and I could like feel my legs, but like not fully.
So like they're asleep in that way?
Yeah, it feels like they're super numb. Like I was sitting on my legs for like hours. Kind of what it felt like.
Okay.
And the first few times a nurse accompanies you to the bathroom because they want to like help you and make sure everything is okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I'm like in the bathroom the first time and the nurse gives me this like huge diaper, puts on these two huge pads. It's two like pads that are like this big.
Okay.
And you like overlap them.
Right.
So put it on these two pads. And then there's like witch hazel pads you can put on it as well as like a foam.
What does witch hazel do?
It basically is like, it's a calming and soothing.
Okay.
Sort of. Yeah. It just like helps and calm and soothe.
Right. Because at this point you have just given birth, you had a tear and you are stitched up.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Exactly. And so basically what I learned is like, you're just going to be, for me, I was bleeding for like 5 weeks.
What kind of bleeding?
It's the like first
a period or
like a period.
Wow.
So it's a period and like with clots too.
Where is it? Where is the blood coming from? Is it coming from your uterus and coming down through your vagina or like the stitches bleeding or what is bleeding?
I think it's more so the former. It's okay. Like your body is still like, but it's also because there's been so much injury to the inside of your body, it's just going to keep bleeding.
Yeah.
So what I learned is that like blood is normal. And my doctor told me this. She said, if you have more blood than a heavy period.
Yep.
It's more than a heavy period. And if you have a blood clot bigger than an egg, it's an issue. That's when you call the doctor. Anything other than that is normal.
Oh my bigger God. I just like got egg. So nauseous thinking about having a blood. Because anyone who's had a period who has had a blood clot and you, maybe you might not know that that's what that is, but like the like jelly like blood consistency that is like thicker and not like just a liquid, those are clots. They're usually like the size of like maybe a quarter or like a dime. An egg. That's like about the, no, this isn't it. I was like the microphones. That's
wild.
Wild. So you're bleeding for 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. Are you in constant pain vaginally?
It's a good question. I think it totally varies for the person.
Okay.
I was quite lucky in that it was like barely a first degree tear.
Okay. And as a reminder for folks, there's first degree, second degree, and third degree.
Yes, exactly. I also like didn't have any hemorrhoids. I know a lot of women have a lot of hemorrhoids.
Yeah.
So like, that shit is painful.
Yes. So, like, have you ever had one before?
I have not.
They are awful. I've not given birth and they are debilitating.
It sounds terrible.
Yes.
So there's a lot of women who like are experiencing like the trauma of like their vag being ripped open plus.
And their butt trying to like escape from their body, yeah, essentially.
Exactly,
yes.
Exactly.
Because hemorrhoids are when you have like enlarged veins from like the inside of your anus that like then like pop, like become inflamed or like filled with blood and like come, like become external veins.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's horrifying.
And it's super common.
Yes.
Because when you're pushing, you don't really, most people don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And the thing we're most used to doing is pooping.
Yeah.
So like you're basically like pretending to poop for hours. So of course you're going to get hemorrhoids. So it's super common. Again, no one talks about it.
Yep.
So it's this interesting thing that I'm also learning being postpartum is that everyone's experiences are so different. That I feel like I keep saying I just feel very grateful. I'm like, it was super painful for like the first like 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And it was every time I would pee, it would sting. Pooping was scary.
Yeah.
Scary is kind of the only word I can use because like.
I get that.
I was like I didn't have hemorrhoids, but like it still hurt a bit.
Yes.
And like when you're pushing, you're like, I shouldn't be pushing.
Yeah. You're like, no, I'm trying to keep everything inside right now. Like, I'm trying to stitch myself back together physically. I cannot be exerting any effort down here to be external.
Like, the first poop I did at the doctor, at the hospital, I cheered.
You did it?
I was in the bathroom and I was like, yes! I was like, I did it! And I'm okay! Like, I literally cheered because I pooped after pregnancy.
And you know what? People don't talk about this enough, okay?
They don't.
People don't talk about this.
Cheering after pooping is normal.
Okay. Normalize it.
We should have some podcasts together.
Yeah, honestly. You're onto something. Jesus.
So that was crazy. And then, it's like the whole it just feels like you're doing like an arts and crafts project every time you go to the bathroom. Because then, because like you pee and then it's like you do like the pads and the witch hazel or like whatever.
And what's the foam?
So the foam, there's like a foam that's like witch hazel plus other stuff okay. too. Like aloe. Like I
was
like,
this man on my TikTok was using the foam.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like, there's all different versions. And what's funny is that I like hated using like these thick pads because okay. it like just like felt like a diaper. And so like, it just like, it wasn't comfortable. And instead I found these like disposable like underwear, which is honestly more so like, it's like a diaper basically.
I was like, that's, it sounds exactly like a diaper. Yeah. So keep going.
But it's like a little bit thinner. And then you're just adding on like your foam and like your pads, like your like witch hazel pads onto the diaper essentially.
Onto the disposable underwear, which are said diapers.
Yes. Versus like doing the thick pads, then doing that.
Okay.
Which for me, I found it easier.
Okay.
Like, once like I'm done with it, I can like rip it off, put on a new one, push yep. it in. But it was funny. I went to the doctor for my 2-week checkup and she was like, how are you doing? And I was like, you know what? I was like, I'm doing okay. I was like, I'm just sick of like wearing diapers still. And she was like, what? I was like, I'm just sick of, like, I'm still wearing diapers. And she was like, Lauren, you don't have to be wearing diapers. Like, you don't need to be wearing diapers 2 weeks out. And I was like, oh, yeah. And I knew that.
For sure.
But I was like, I'm wearing diapers for 6 weeks. That's what we all do, right?
Again. People don't talk about this enough.
Don't talk about it.
Come on. Didn't you say that you liked ripping them off at the end of the night? Like they were like Adidas track pants?
Rip them.
Awesome.
It was fucking awesome.
That sounds like a great way to like end your day. It was, you know what I mean? Like I'm done.
Ripping it off, throwing in the trash.
It's like taking off your bra the second you get home from work. Yes. Where I'm like, I'm taking off my bra and I'm ripping off my underwear.
It was really satisfying.
Honestly?
Really
satisfying. Hell yeah.
But yeah, it's like one of those things where it's interesting. Like I was like clear to do light workouts
yeah.
2 weeks after postpartum because my tears were so minimal, mm-hmm. which is amazing. I had a friend who gave birth 3 days after me. She was like, I'm not allowed to do like barely anything for at least 6 weeks.
What kind of tear did she have?
She had, I think, a second degree.
Okay.
Or maybe it was just an actual first degree, whereas mine was like a minimal first degree.
Oh, okay.
Is it the first or second?
But she and was third like, is that where you tear from your vagina to your anus?
I think so.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also like, a thing that I never knew about too is like the word tear is terrifying. Terrifying. Take this away. Take this away.
We gotta end this.
Yeah. Like to me, I always thought tears were like going like from like your vagina, like ripping it to be bigger.
Right.
That's what I thought it was. That's actually not always the case. Like for me, it's like, I used a mirror when I was giving birth
because
I wanted to see what was going on. And the nurse showed me what the tears were. She was like, hey, which is great. Right. So I thought.
Was that okay with you? I don't know if I would want someone to be like, hey, look at your tearing right here.
Well, actually, it was better for me because the tearing isn't necessarily like your vaginal hole getting bigger.
Okay.
It was like the skin below my vagina
yeah.
was thinning out. And so there were little tears in the skin below.
Oh, okay.
Which to me is like way less scary than my vagina ripping bigger.
Yes. I picture there's like if your vagina were like a hole made of paper, someone slicing open right. one side of the, what like ripping open the paper.
Right. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
And that isn't what it was. So
okay.
So I actually found it to be like, relieving to have her show that to me.
Yeah, I suppose this is less scary than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. So yeah. That to me is, again, something else I just like, no one talks about.
No one talks about this.
And we just hear the word and it sounds terrifying. And again, there's different levels of what it looks like. But I was like, oh, seeing like the skin tearing that's below the vagina is different than like the vagina ripping open.
Yes. Vagina ripping open is just like puts like the most terrifying image in my head.
Totally.
God.
Totally.
But again, like, and the whole point of us having this episode and Lauren being able to come and like talk about her experience is because women don't talk about this enough and people don't talk about this enough. People talk about like the joy of childbirth and like how incredible it is or how scary it was. They don't talk about the direct aftermath. They don't talk about the long-term aftermath. And then, well, some people do, and we support and applaud those people, but I think we just want to make it a more open conversation to know how to have these conversations, to talk about mental health, resourcing yourself in advance, to know what plan you're going to have in place, to know what it looks like physically for you afterwards, to learn about the pelvic floor, to learn about these tears, to learn about how to physically resource yourself.
Yeah.
And then also, like, we'd be remiss not to talk about the fact that the United States, like, does not offer any sort of great maternity leave. 1 in 4 women have to return to work 2 weeks after giving birth. Mm-hmm. Some women are still in the hospital then. So that is categorically insane. Mm-hmm. And what we can do as a community to show up better for women in postpartum.
Yeah.
So I'd just love to know, like, let's close out on, like, what you think as someone who has experienced that, like, how were people helpful when you were in postpartum, and how can we be helpful to women in postpartum?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think, you know, there's this saying about how, like, you just fully change, like, upon giving birth. It's like you're a new person physically and mentally. Like, I'm finding that to be true for me. And so I think there's, like, a sense of grace in that, like, as I'll speak for me, like, as I'm rediscovering who I am, a sense of grace from, like, my people, my friends, of, like, being on that journey with me, as opposed to maybe having a certain expectation. I think that's really, really helpful.
That's really beautiful.
That's a big one. Food. You did this for me. You sent me food. That was so sweet. Sending food. I can't even begin to express how helpful that is.
Yeah.
Because the decision making you're doing, I was doing all day about, like, what to do. How do I care for this baby? The last thing I wanted to think about was making food. And
also, how would you have the time to make yourself food when figuring this out? And that's, like, the thing, folks, and this is not me applauding myself. I DoorDashed her some Jones on Third, like frozen lasagnas. It takes 10 minutes. It costs $50 and it makes a huge difference to women after they have given birth.
Huge. Cause even it's so funny. Cause even not having to decide what to order.
Yeah.
Cause, like, I'm so grateful for, like, the DoorDash gift cards and things too. It's amazing. Thank you. But, like, to even just be like, this is what's in the freezer.
Yes.
Like, that was huge.
Readily available. Also, yep. If people are looking for things to send, one time a friend was like, oh, you should send oatmeal cookies because oats help with the production of breast milk and lactation.
Yeah.
So that's another thing. If you are a baker, oatmeal cookies, send them over there.
Yep.
Something in the freezer, something that people can, like, that's ready to eat. Midwest girl here, big on casseroles. Yeah. I think what I sent you was, like, an eggplant parmesan and so lasagna. Yep, Marissa gave birth over the weekend or last week, and I sent her I was just like, rinse and repeat. Same order. Yeah.
It was send perfect. It over. Keep doing it.
Get it over there.
But yeah, exactly. It's like having those things that are just, like, easy to make. It's so helpful. So helpful. And the oatmeal cookies one is a good one too.
Yeah.
Like, before, I think it was, like, at 38 or 37 weeks, I had two friends come over and we made a ton of lactation balls, which were just, like, it's, like, oats and almond butter and brewer's yeast and flaxseed, all these things that help with lactation. And we just, like, had an evening. It was so fun. We, like, listened to music and made a bunch of these in preparation. And
that's amazing.
And I ate all of them, like, within, like, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And I keep making them. It's been a fun thing for me to keep eating because they're so delicious.
We should post the recipe. So we'll post the recipe on social as well for a couple of these things, like the lactation balls, especially, just because of a banger of a name as well.
Yeah.
But again, like, that is, like, that's grounded in community too. Yep. And I think, like, the end of the day, showing up and caring and trying to be of service to women who have just given birth. They have just entered the most, like, physically taxing season of their life and also emotionally and mentally taxing season of their life. So anything that you can do to take a load off of them, mm-hmm. whether that is, like, offering them a space to, like, vent and cry, going over and offering to clean their house, like, doing chores around the house that they no longer have, like, the space or, like, the time or the mental power to do, sending food that's already ready made and ready to rock. And I think what I've heard from friends is just asking how I am and how it is going and like, how am I? Because so many people ask, like, how's the baby? How's the baby? How's the baby? How are you?
Yes.
How are you doing? How are you recovering? How are you feeling? And just showing up and caring, I think, goes so much farther than people know.
I agree. I totally agree. There was one thing that a friend did that has stuck with me too. I think a lot of women talk about the sense of, like, you might lose who you were. Mm-hmm. And this idea of, like, you can become so fully ingrained and encompassed in being a mom that, like, your hobbies, your interests, your likes, those things just sort of, like, go out the window. And that's been a thing that I feel like a lot of friends have told me, like, if I can give any advice, like, try to hold on to those things that make you feel like you. And so a friend asked me, like, what's the thing that you want to hold on to? And I was saying, for me, it's cooking. I love cooking. It's a big hobby of mine. And as a gift postpartum, she sent me a cookbook. And, like, I loved that. The sense, too, of, like, being able to to really like help friends see themselves or help friends maintain versions of themselves that they want to maintain, I think is like a really thoughtful thing that I want to do for my friends who are also going through this.
Oh, that's going to make me cry. That's so beautiful.
Really thoughtful.
Really is going to make me cry. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Which friend is that?
Michelle did that for me.
Michelle, shout out Michelle. It's such a beautiful question to ask someone before they give birth to like just have that be a focus. What do you want to hold on to? What part of you do you want to carry into this next season, this next phase, if you will? And then two, to support that directly afterwards and act as like a physical reminder to remember what you said, hold on to this part.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Michelle.
Really,
I love that.
Really thoughtful.
Any last words or thoughts about postpartum that you want to offer before we sign off?
That's a great question. I mean, it's just like, it's wild. It's not really saying anything specific, but I'm finding that for me, I keep saying, people are like, how are you doing? And I keep saying like, I'm just taking it hour by hour.
Yep.
And I'm finding that for me, that's been helpful because it's so many ups and downs and it's so hard to even verbalize how I'm feeling most of the time. But I think the more we can like have conversations like this, the more that we can be open to talking about the hard things, be open to talking about the things that feel like TMI. Like to me, like so much of what I like aspire to do, especially with what we're doing in this podcast, is to like get rid of TMI. Like there's too much shit, especially like with like so much shit that we go through as women that is sharing too much. And I think that's the reason why it holds such weight or feels like such a big thing to discuss. And it's the reason why we don't talk about a lot of hard things. And so to me, it's like, how can we have the conversation about postpartum just be more natural? Let's get rid of calling postpartum depression just postpartum.
Yep.
Like, how do we really like expand what the definition of postpartum is? I think that's really important and really crucial to ensure that we have larger conversations about it.
I love that. I have nothing better to offer than the woman who just gave birth speaking on postpartum. So thank you for sharing. And it is such a core facet of who you are and also what we want to do here, which is, I love this idea of just like, yeah, there's no such thing as TMI. And the reason that women are kept in the dark and could be scared and go into these experiences in the unknown, that could be harmful to them and cause them to be under-resourced is because of social stigmas around TMI. Exactly. So there's no such thing as TMI. If you want a place to share and to talk openly about vaginal tears and hemorrhoids and blood clots and bleeding, but also spirituality and journaling and how to support another woman in community who's gone through the biggest life phase that change that she'll ever go through, you're in the right place.
Yeah, this is a space for all of that.
It is. So that wraps up this episode for In Phase Podcast, the Cycle Syncing Podcast. You can find us on socials at In Phase Pod. You can find me on social at Robin Dibovic. Good luck spelling that.
And you can find me on social at Lauren Cortizo. Please like, please subscribe, and come hang out with us next week.
See you later.
Bye.